We do still make mistakes, right?
Yeah,
I want to be really clear. It's probably while people listening to this, they say, well, for me, that was a very different experience in JLR. We still make mistakes, and I want to be really clear, and we acknowledge them, and we need to improve on it. But we really try to put those fundamentals in place that you're feeling okay, that you can have those conversations.
The Still Parents podcast is proudly supported by Global's Make Some Noise. Click details in the description to find out more.
Welcome along to the Still Parents podcast. My name is Dan. I am here as ever with Matt and with Ryan from the Lily Mae Foundation. On this episode, we're joined by Leonard Hornick, the Chief Commercial Officer for JLR, Jaguar Land Rover. Thank you so much for taking the time, because I know you're a very busy man. And we're also joined with Blaine. It's Blaine Chapman, who's the Global Brand Communications Director for Jaguar Land Rover. Have I got both of your job titles correct?
Yeah,
very fantastic. Good. My name's Dan. My job title is Voice on Stick. So that's who we are. It's a really interesting episode we've got here, because living with grief day to day and navigating the dynamics of a workplace. Now, I know, Blaine, as well, you have a story of loss within your family. And also, Leonard, within your roles and what you do at JLR and talking about company cultures. Before we get into that, Leonard, if I can just, so people can get to know you, if you could just tell us a little bit more about yourself and your role and your day-to-day life at JLR.
Thank you very much. And thank you so much for inviting us. Yeah, JLR, I've been there now for a little bit over 4 years. And it's been a true transformation that we have gone through, which is truly exciting. Maybe we'll talk about that in a little bit more later on.
Yes.
But before that, I worked in Dyson, another British company, for about 8 years. And before that, I was in Sony mainly for a long time.
Wow.
The
little brands then.
Yeah, just a few brands. And so I've got a bit of experience that I won't do. But it's fascinating how everything is changing and how attitudes in work are changing, how, you know, do you also see how the whole world and our values are changing and how that reflects in the workplace. I'm really fascinated by that. At the same time, I've got my own family life. I've got, together with my wife, 6 girls that are all around doing their own thing and doing well. So it's been busy, yeah.
You say that's an understatement of the year. I've got 2 daughters and I would consider myself busy. You've got 3 times that amount and you've still got hair.
Yeah.
Blaine, how about yourself?
Yeah, so again, just to echo what Lena was saying, thanks for having us and facilitating this conversation. You've got a lovely setup here. About me, so my wife, Tessa, so we've been married 6 years, now been together 13, got 2 beautiful kids, Bo and Bonnie, a boy and girl, oldest is boy, youngest is girl, and I've been at JLR now just a year less than Leonard, so just over 3 years.
And so what's your role within the company? What do you do?
So brand communications director, basically my team's responsible for bringing all of the advertising to life, so anything you see on TV, billboards, social media, in magazines, that's come through my team.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So a lot of fun, a lot of really cool stuff. We're very fortunate that we have a very, you know, outside of the vehicle coming to life, we have a very tangible finished product with our work, which is always super rewarding and is what I love to do. I love building brand. I was at Oakley, the eyewear, before I was at JLR.
Yeah. Were you Oakley? Yeah.
Yeah. So I love working with amazing brands, amazing product, and getting to tell those stories.
When you look at the brands that you've worked at, you're working in big brands where you've got huge staff numbers, not just obviously in the UK, but I would imagine worldwide as well. Leonard, question for you. So we know that you are the executive sponsor of the Working Parents Network at JLR. Can you just tell us a little bit more about that role and your commitment to well-being and inclusion across the company?
Oh, thank you very much. And I really want to make sure that I'm not being positioned as someone who knows all the answers and guru in this.
No.
I am not at all. And I make a lot of mistakes myself in my family life all the time, as well as in business life. So I want to be really clear about this. But I do think that what I do know and I do experience is that, you know, your life outside work influences the workplace and your workplace influences your family life. Mm. And we're all striving toward that ambition of having that in a balance that you can really optimize in both places, be a fantastic father and being a good partner, being, you know, a good friend of many people. At the same time, you want to make sure that your teams and your people within your teams are optimized their performance, but they can only do that if they have a right balance and they have a right mind.
It's really interesting. Why do you think then it's so important to talk about baby loss specifically?
I think, you know, there's a lot of things that can impact you. But even the thought of losing a child or a baby, born or unborn, is, you know, just you know, and you can imagine what that does to your balance and what it does to the workplace, what it does to yourself. And of course, during those 30 years that I've worked, I've got people that actually sometimes need the rhythm of work to work themselves through a loss, you know, where they have a, you know, and so I think it that there is a symbiotic relationship between it that can really help. And I don't know if that is man or female specific. I don't know. I don't think so. I think it can really help to, you know, to find that rhythm, to find that space. I don't want to call it a distraction, but it can really help to make sure that, you know, you work through that. And there is nothing more beautiful than in the workplace to find common ground or to find a listening ear or to find support. And and especially, I think it is to find that you're not alone. You know, I think that is a... And that's why I joined the Working Parents Network, because also from the outside, so much pressure is coming in nowadays and everybody needs to be what I call perfect, and nobody is. You know?
And everyone remembers everything now, don't they?
And they even post it, right?
You said something nasty about my toenails 400 years ago. I must destroy you.
Yeah. The thing is, though, I understand that because I used to work in education before we started the charity, and it's exactly that. Everything has to be perfect, and if it's not perfect, you mark down on it straight away. So from a you know, how you feel in the workplace is obviously extremely important, and how you are dealt with by management or by your line managers, whoever that may be, is really important as well. And I think what I'm interested in at the same time is, if you haven't been through it yourself, how do you support somebody like a Blaine who comes to ask for your support?
Maybe there is people that have not experienced anything in there. But to be honest, if you look and you're not, you know, the people you deal with in your family, your wider family, your friends, your network, children loss or baby loss or any, there is some, right? And we had to deal with that as well. Just like, and even if it's not yourself, it hurts you. And it's really interesting because one of my friends that went through a loss, and afterwards he said to me, you know, I kind of want to be with the people that also changed a little bit because of my loss.
I
was a deep thought. Again, it comes to mind right now. I didn't prepare any of this, but
what I like already is it's so much easier to connect on an emotional, an emotional intelligence level with people who just say it as it is, and they have those real opinions, and they might be a little bit, you know, like no one has the answers to everything, you know. And one thing, there's a couple of bits that I want to pick up on that you've already mentioned, because I find them really interesting. Because one of them, you said that you don't want to use the word distractions, which I think is great, because it's something that comes up with a lot of our guests, and it's framed as exactly that. Now, the distractions, which is maybe stopping someone from really fully getting into their grief journey, and whether that distraction is, it could be gambling, it could be an addiction, it could be, and we've had plenty, throwing themselves into work, just completely all in. We've had this with a few guests, haven't we? And the one which I really liked was when, because you said it a couple of times, was that rhythm with your friend who was the writing the book. And because you need that, and it's all conducive, isn't it, to just being on that best track. And there's a lot of cliches, isn't it, how people are like, oh, if family is difficult, is it maybe, maybe it's a stereotype with men. It's like, oh, you've brought your work home with you and you're not present. But on the flip side, you take your family to work. And if you not can't be around that mentality and that environment, which knows that, okay, you're here to do your job, and this is why you're here. But at the same time, you're still, I'm trying not to swear, you're still a human, and you still are going through something. And so to even have, I'm working in a company where I know that actually, if I'm having a day like that, I can talk about it without the fear of just getting hammered for it. And I would just like to put that down as a remark of respect from us towards you guys for even offering that. Because I've worked in big corporations before where they say one thing about the staff culture and I see a completely different reality.
I think I want to just come back to a little bit what you said earlier about making sure people don't feel alone or lonely in a sense. And again, from a lived experience, it can be a very lonely place. Like when you go through what you go through. So I think the fact that if you, like as Dan's just touched upon, is the fact that if there is space for people to know that they are not doing this alone, wherever they may be, and including work, then I think it's a huge advantage for that person, because they need everyone, they need that support wherever they can get it from as well, really. So I wonder what your thoughts on that as well were concerned. Like, yeah.
Yeah, you know. I'd love to give a perspective because I love just actively listening to all that. There's so many jumping off points that I'm getting into in my own head there. I suppose the loneliness is a really important topic for me because I'm fortunate enough to lead a big team, not as big as Leonard's, but I think sometimes in a corporate world, you can really get hung up on following process and following rules.
Yeah.
And what do I do in this? And it's very easy to forget, like, we're all humans here.
It's environment, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And on the topic of loneliness, like when we went through, so Tessa and I, when we went through what we did, I'd never had a conversation on the subject of miscarriage before at all.
We were saying this before we started recording.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And it was really eye-opening. So in that moment when we got the news, it really felt like we were the only people in the world that this had ever happened to, and we're going through this.
Did you feel isolated?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And we had an amazing nurse, you know, God bless the NHS. We had an amazing nurse in the moment, and we were in the room, very tight environment. It's, you know, such a surreal moment to think back to it. We step out and, you know, she just grabbed our arms and we're like, look, I've been through it this twice before.
Yeah.
And then I had two kids after that. You guys are going to be fine. Stay close and it'll all be okay. And in that moment, just that instant connection was like, wow, okay, that was the start. And then throughout the whole process, not everyone, I'm naturally a bit of an extrovert, so I don't mind opening up. And I see actually massive power in vulnerability, actually, and harnessing that to help others. And that's why it's important to me on the subject of loneliness. I somehow, the more I opened up, we've got an amazing colleague who's not here, but you were speaking to, Michelle Harmon.
Yeah.
I opened up to her in the workplace and she talked about this Working Parents Network conference that we were having, then asked me if I'd like to talk at it. And immediately I said yes, but I didn't really know what I was signing up to.
Yeah. A bit like today.
Yeah, kind of like today. And I didn't know the path that I was going to go down, but for some reason I had that impulse and it felt like the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And then our auditorium at Gaydon is quite grand and can sit, how many, about 500 something people in there. And we ended up on a stage. Leonard was on the panel. I was on the panel and then two other colleagues as well. And got asked to open up about my story. So to the point when you were saying you know, about Leonard as a stakeholder, being able to, first of all, create those environments in that workplace is something there. I've only been at JLR 3.5 years, but from, you know, experiences in the business and the culture, maybe going back 10 years, I don't think that would have been happening on that scale to that amount of people and that openly, which is great. But I went through in great detail about my own personal experience during that talk. And then the response afterwards was just like quite mind-blowing to me. Like
Were you expecting it?
No, not at all. I don't know what I was expecting. The whole thing was quite like this, a bit unfiltered.
Yeah.
It's like something, I associate nervousness with growth and it's a positive
100%.
Thing. I'll run towards it rather than kind of shy away from it.
And I love that.
It was just go into it. We've done this thing. Even colleagues and friends I was telling about and family didn't really know what it was that I was doing. And I can remember walking out of the auditorium and there was this lady who was in the audience and she came up to me and she said, you know, I've never looked at it from the perspective of my husband before and we experienced something similar.
Wow.
And the first thing I'm going to do is go out of here and phone him. And then we just both in tears and hugged each other sort of thing. And then after that, the beauty of, you know, in a corporate organization, you've got the ability to connect, but not face-to-face. So you've got Teams and stuff. And I just got Teams messages popping off. And I had people just reaching out to me, men saying, you know, I didn't think that my experience was valid and worth sharing and talking about because I wasn't physically going through anything. I had to play the role of like keeping everything together at home when I was going through that.
Stereotypes,
and,
isn't there?
Yeah. And then we just started talking. I'd met up with a few of them for a coffee just to have a chat. And I was like, for me, on the point of loneliness, I've been on my own mental health journey, and the thought of someone being alone when there is the ability to connect if you want to, it's like, I don't like that. So the more, if through my experience, I can just have a conversation about it and broadcast it in a way that makes more people feel that they can do that, I think that's a huge positive to take something that was quite not so positive.
But ultimately, what's happened there is JLR facilitated the opportunity for you to give people permission to be able to talk about something which subconsciously they haven't even thought about for maybe a period of time. Mm. And because you are on the stage speaking to people about your own self, it subconsciously gives people permission to be able to open up.
Do you know as well? I think from a really blunt way, almost like knowing that there's actually that level of care and that duty of care, which is then not only being spoken about, but followed up, that would actually make me, if I was an employer of the company, go, whether it's a conscious decision or not, I'd probably then work harder because it's like just knowing that I've got a worth here. Mm. And again, like we're talking about being unscripted or, you know, maybe a bit nervous or that, I'd rather have that over jargon and just everything being that no one who ever says, it's not real. I need to have that vulnerability with someone and know that someone is fallible to go, actually, I like you then because I'm the same. You know, an old radio, sorry to be a little bit crude, but an old radio producer I had mine was like, you can't be afraid to show your skid marks to other people.
Yeah.
And it was very crude and we didn't use that term on air, and this bit might not make the final edit, but it was that, you know, you need to have that level.
I bet it does.
You need to have that level of realness about you in the first place. And again, I know that's not for everybody, but I think for the vast majority it is. And so to see you going on stage and do that, and it's been proven by the reaction that you had.
But I also think as well, male vulnerability over probably, I don't know, maybe the last 10 years, in my opinion, society sees men now totally different to maybe what they did 10, 15 years ago. Mm. I know when we lost Lily, which is 15 years ago, it was completely polar different to what it is now.
Can I ask you a quick
polar
question?
Different.
Does it feel like 15 years ago?
I can guarantee if you ask that question to anybody that's lost a baby, they'll say it feels like yesterday, but it also feels like 15 years ago.
I fully agree with you.
Yeah. I can tell you everything. I can tell you
place. 15 and 9, isn't it?
I can tell you placement of things in the room. I know what was what and where and stuff. I know it all, but vulnerability of men and the ability for men to be able to show that is, in my opinion, one of the biggest changes that has allowed baby loss, cancer, MND, whatever, you know, horrible diseases are out there.
What was the first core feeling that you felt?
Wow.
What was the immediate raw feeling that you felt?
When we found out?
Yeah.
That's
absolute devastation. Yeah. That's maybe not a feeling. Feeling helpless.
Yeah.
Because my role as a dad or as a male is to fix and to protect.
Yeah.
And I couldn't do it. So I felt completely out of control. I felt like you were just thrown into this like spiraling universe that it didn't matter what you said, what you did, what you picked up, anything. I just felt completely worthless.
And when we found out, I was the first one to find out about Callie because my wife got him for emergency C-section. So she didn't quite know what had happened when she went in. So I was the first one to find out. So then, as Ryan's absolutely right, it's like you're taking so much information in, but then you're having to hold yourself together to be able to then deliver the news or compose yourself to be able to, because I'm sure Ryan will say the same thing. Your wife, partner is completely, well, they're in a different world at that point. They're broken, aren't they, in a sense? You're broken as well, but you have to find a way of bringing some kind of, well, I thought I had to bring some kind of normality, strength to that moment, because if I didn't, then the whole room would have melted away, in a sense. So yeah, it was.
What about you, Blaine?
Yeah,
I can remember feeling numb in the moment, and I can remember seeing Tessa's reaction. You know, there was tears, and I just went straight into, like, again, I've got to fix this and find a way. And interested on the subject of, you know, how as men you're supposed to cope with it. My mum was actually on holiday at the time. So we'd told everyone a little bit early. We'd been away from my grandparents' 80th birthday celebrations, like the week before. And we told everyone in the family that we were expecting. Right. Everyone's excited and stuff. So, you know, you're getting comfortable with the idea, and everyone's like, oh, it's all positive because, you know, we hadn't experienced it in our family in any way before. So no one's mind had really gone there.
Is that naivety, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a possible thing that could happen.
Yeah, yeah.
And I can remember then getting back from the hospital. And first of all, actually, I want to call it out because on the subject of JLR, I had a fantastic manager at the time, Anna, who just kind of ripped up the rule book and was just like, down tools, take the time you need, just come back to me when you're ready.
That's what you want, isn't it?
And like that, first of all, gave me the space to be the fixer in the household and just do the immediate of, like, you know, making sure our little boy was picked up from school, doing this, doing that.
But also, there's your distractions.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. But I can then remember, I didn't want to, you know, ruin my mum's holiday when she was away. And my dad was still in the country because she was on a girls' holiday. So I went in the garden and I phoned my dad, who was at work, and told him what happened, and I was getting choked up at the time. And he was like, all right, mate, I'm just at work, so I'm just got to go. And then I didn't have anyone to talk to after that because I didn't want to take it back into Tesla with what we were getting. Weren't the time. And he phoned me back later that evening, and he was at home by himself, and he was like, since then, he was like, I've nearly put a nail through my hand. I've nearly, like, smashed a million windows and stuff like that by accident. He's like, and I had to leave the site and go home.
Wow.
And he was like, I'm sorry. He was like, I just didn't know what to say in the
moment.
That's
interesting.
And it was, first of all, like, to have testament to him, to have the foresight to then call me and just kind of unpack it a little bit and say, look, I know that's not how I should have reacted, but it's how I did react and I'm sorry. And, you know, first of all, what you're going through, I've not been through it, but I'm sure it's horrific. If you need me, I'm here. Like that, just being able to open up that dialogue, that was because, you know, he's of probably a generation where it's a case of...
I was about to say, it's that generational thing as well, isn't it? We've spoke about this before because I love Matt's old man. He's brilliant, but it's from a different time, isn't it? And it's that whole... I was going to ask you the way, like, how your father reacted and stuff and the stereotype that maybe he fits in within his generations.
Yeah. But then he went into, again, as well, a very similar mindset of trying to protect my mum. And like, well, she's not back from holiday for another few days.
Yeah.
Want to tell her in the right way rather than just breaking the news. And that seemed like a comfortable space for him to navigate as well, which was really interesting.
Where do you see things going in terms of how you want to have that relationship with staff and encouraging that open communication over the next, you know, where's it going to be in another 10 years from now?
I've got a take on that. I mean, for me... we use this term in work, and it is, JLR's not the first place I've heard of it. It's like, bring your full self to work.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think a lot of that has been attached to surface level identity.
Right.
As in, you know, the clothes you wear, the, you know, the jewellery you put on, how you, you know, go about
your
business.
It's not literal, is it?
No, but I think the fullness of self is everything you experience on every day outside of the four walls that are the office.
Yeah.
You know, it's been
present, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not, look, everyone's flawed. You know, we all have our moments. Sometimes you can feel it bad because of everything that we're talking about and so much else. You know, and you can go into meetings in a way where you might not be having the best moment and stuff, and that's okay. I think to truly embrace that, bring your full self to work, it's bring everything to work, your kids, you know, your partners, you know, you could have had your pets been put down or something like that, and it's okay to talk about
it. Probably don't bring that to work, though.
No, but don't bring that to work, because that can be a nuisance. But but I think it's the everyone's experience for me is valid, and I don't think you should always measure your own experience on how tough the thing that someone else has gone through versus what you've gone through. If you feel something, it's real.
Yes.
And we shouldn't be judging each other on, you know, whatever.
It's that simple, really, isn't it? And again, I mean, I think it's great because it's just acknowledging you can't fix it and you might not even need to agree with everything. But I think it goes a long way knowing at least that person listened to me and I felt heard.
Yeah,
you're not going to solve my life, but I'm here now. I brought my full self to work, and thank you for helping me with that environment that you're creating along with us.
But again, I think it's talking to people.
That's right.
I think it's talking to people on a level that you don't know what they're facing at that point. Because everyone is facing something, aren't they? Like, you know, and listen, we all know that there are areas where people may sadly at times take advantage of it, but I don't think we're here to talk about that. I think it's more talking about the fact that, like I said, they may have woken up on that morning and something may have happened to them even on the way to work, you know, and you just don't know what they're facing. So it's talking to people in a way that you make sure that you guard their mental health, but you also, it's a fine balance of making sure that they are here to work and to get on with their job. But, and I think especially men, you know, men are very good at sticking the mask on and just going, right, I'm going to, you talked about it earlier, didn't you, about distraction, but they see that as an advantage to start with, because like, I'll do what I've always done in general, because the clients that me and Ryan have sat down in front of, you know, the first thing they do is they say, right, I threw myself in because that's the thing I can control. And that's the thing that I can do, which I know is correct. So you don't necessarily know what they're going through, do you? Because like I said, the mask is there and it's like, but eventually they may just fold at some point. And emotion coming out, hopefully, is a good thing, because then you know, right, it's the rawness of it, isn't it? And right, we know where we stand with this, and let's help people.
Leonard, I've got a question. If you're not in the best moment, and I know you haven't lost yourself, but like we say, life is life, and this stuff happens, doesn't it? Where's your support? Who gives you support?
Well, I before answering that, I think we have in JLR, and it's, you know, we had quite a special journey. I think our CEO, Adrian Mardell, has been really instrumental to that. I think some of the seeds were planted by Thierry, that was his the CEO before, in the sense of how do we create an environment where people can, and this is the business side of things. And I think they actually beautifully marry with what we just talked about. But how do we make sure that people feel in a place where they can come as you are, maximum contribution, have, you know, don't need to, you know, use it as a place where, you know, they can create passion, they can create energy and feel the camaraderie. You know, when my wife used to work for a very, very long time, and when she quit working, and she said that is a few years ago, but she still always says, you know, what do you miss the most? And it's the camaraderie, it's the sense of belonging, it's the sense of, you know, feeling those conversations at the coffee corner that you can this, that, the other. And I think those critical elements, they help massively, I think, with any kind of big thing that negative thing or it happens in your life. And it doesn't mean you need to go overboard and go like, you know, I'm going to do all the other things you just talked about, right? And they turn into something negative, into something extreme. But I think work does help, because it's a place where you see people that you see 40 hours a week or more, or a little bit less. It depends on the situation. But I think that sense of camaraderie and when you're, you know, and I think that they have really created that environment where it's okay to have that conversation. If somebody says, hey, how's it going? And instead of, it's all right, and you walk on, they say, well, actually, it's not okay today, you know? And
knowing it's okay to do that.
And then have that. And sometimes it's just about asking two or three questions as a leader or as a manager or as anyone or as a colleague. Is really critical. And we are in a place, our company is there for a long time, and a lot of the colleagues are also friends. And a lot of them live in the similar areas, right? And so there is, you know, there is this real sense of what that we can deliver, that sort of contribution to people's lives. And so when I go for support, I am a little bit of a workaholic sometimes, I have to say. But finding that those spaces with people to talk about deeper things at work is great. You know, do that with your friends, with your family, of course, is there as well. I do always feel that at the end, you can't do it alone, but you do have to fix it yourself. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And that is something that, you know, is...
I think what was really interesting...
You can lead a horse to water, but they got to drink it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What was really interesting was when you said, you know, taking the time to be able to listen or ask those couple of questions. And I think that there's almost a fix-it mentality in lots of companies that they feel that they have to give the answer to the question or the answer to how somebody is feeling and try and justify why they've had a crap morning or why they've had this or that, when actually sometimes it is just a case of
it's a bit patronizing, isn't it?
Listening and what have you. Yeah. Which leads me into asking you, if you had to give advice to somebody then, who came to you for advice as a line manager or whoever that may be to support somebody who has lost a baby or who is going through, you know, difficult situations and stuff, what advice would you give?
I think first and foremost is, you know, Dave and Adrian created a network so where we have professional support, right? And we also talk about where, and it's on websites, it's on communications, it's on all kinds, and then the networks do the addition. So, you know, we should not be in the position of being a professional as managers, leaders, or colleagues, but we do need to listen. And we do need to acknowledge, you know, and that is taking that time to do that. And I had one-to-ones that you nowadays have with a lot of people, and sometimes I've got a list of business issues I want to get through.
Yeah.
And various times I don't even went through one single thing.
Mm. Yeah.
Because I know that the person comes with, you know, and something happened.
Yeah.
And I can feel it, right? I can feel it in my, when somebody walks in and having the meeting, I'm like, this is going to be a different conversation. And and I think if you feel, and it's all about the feeling, if you feel that the company is okay with that, that the company likes that, if you feel that that kind of, you know, work for me is a lot. So if in a lot of the cases, you know, I have those conversations with my
with my peers. I love hearing that, because it's not that linear, is it, in the first place? And the fact that you, like you say, I mean, in a kind of a way, we come in today, we've met you guys, we've got a list of things as well, and we've probably done about 5% of everything, but I feel the conversation that we've had has gone down the route which is going to be of value to staff, for whether from your company or from maybe even show the way for other companies as well to go, this is a good blueprint on how to do this, because, you know, we're not meant to be alone. We are, you know, when isolated, I think that's when we start questioning those, that, you know, when you're in that especially if you're in a bad place, and we're social creatures, you know, we're creatures of communication, aren't we?
Yeah.
Even though we might talk a lot of nonsense sometimes, but knowing
I love the way you're watching your P's and Q's.
Yeah, man.
I would have normally
used a different word there. Yeah.
But it's
like you're in the headmaster's office.
I know, because I remember how that used to.
And you used to spend a lot of time there as well, didn't you?
I feel when I come out, Kelly's getting caned again. Yeah. It was a while ago. But I mean, the point I'm getting at is, I think it's knowing that that is there. It's knowing that that support is there without necessarily needing to take it. It's just that feeling of that value of going, okay, so I can actually do this, and this is how much respect I've got from that company in the first place.
Also, on the point of listening, it's actively listening as well. Yeah. My wife and I have a great question. Yes. If one of us has had a bad day, it's like, right, do you want solutions or do you just want me to listen?
Yeah. Wait, I'm having that one.
Yeah.
I'm using that later.
It's my 23rd wedding anniversary this year. I'm running out of new lines.
But, you know, the amount of times, and I do think it came from my professional life, where we just, you know, she'd say something and I'd be going like, problem solving, trying. She's like, I don't need the answers. Just please, just listen.
Mm. Fascinating what you're saying as well. Because again, at the start of our loss, when we went through what we went through, there was so many times where I was trying to give Crystal, my wife, the answers for everything. Mm. And I know now, looking back, that literally it was going in and out, because she didn't want, as you said, she just wanted me to be there in whatever way I was. So that's an interesting.
That's stereotype again, isn't it? The fixing, it's not.
But on the point of actively listening, someone won't, from a leadership perspective within the business.
Yeah.
People won't overtly tell you.
Yeah.
So the listening goes a little bit deeper. That's where I think emotional intelligence is valued more than ever in the workplace.
Oh, I could not agree more.
Because you've got to be able to read people, and you've got to understand, because that's how you get the best out of people. Mm. And look, we're in a business, and we need the business to succeed, but you'll only do that if you can know how to work with people, understand what makes them tick and when they truly need you, and then like give them the support that they need. Yeah. And like you said, May said it earlier. If you can address that, actually, people will work 10 times harder for you.
I genuinely believe it.
But that's the wrong term, not work 10 times harder, but like they'll come on the journey with you.
Yeah.
Like when I first started at JLR.
Well, you're part of the team, aren't you?
Yeah, but it's when you join a new company, like it's a bit like a, you know, a relationship. You're figuring it out to start off with, and is this the right place for me? And is this where
it's
I want to be?
Analogy,
And I feel like because of, you know, we've got amazing products and, you know, we won't go into all of that, but from a business standpoint, even in the last, I'd say, 12 months, it's just started to get under my skin because of all of those things in a positive sense of, you know, camaraderie, the sense of community, the emotional security, all of these things. Like, that's the product and that's great. And there's lots of great brands and we've worked for some of them that have fantastic product. But the sweet spot for me is actually being able to feel like you're something, part of something bigger. You know, not serving the self, serving the...
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, everyone else.
We still... We do still make mistakes, right?
Yeah,
I want to be really clear. It's probably, while people listening to this, they say, well, for me, that was a very different experience in JLR. We still make mistakes, and I want to be really clear, and we acknowledge them, and we need to improve on it. But we really try to put those fundamentals in place that you're feeling okay, that you can have those conversations. And that looks simple, and it's really sad within a sentence, but... It's incredibly hard work.
But I think it makes you more, you know, easy to be respected because, again, just addressing the fact, because if anyone goes, oh, I don't make mistakes, everyone's going to go, and this is going to be the first time I swear, everyone's going to go, bollocks, that's not true. Then knowing that you do, it's
again. But it's also, if you're a manager of a team of people, you can know the people within their job role, i.e., that's your, you know, I don't know, manager of this or that's that or that's that. But then there's knowing the people and knowing the people. Yeah. So you know them as a person. You know what makes them tick. You take the time out to be able to listen to them, to understand what their hobbies are outside and all this sort of stuff, because then that makes them value you a hell of a lot more than if all you do is just value their job title. That's what I've
fully
learned.
Agree.
I mean, and that was coming from education where actually you were just a teacher and you were paid to get kids through exams. And it was as simple as that.
Ryan changed his career from, because after the loss.
Because I nearly battered the deputy head.
Yeah.
And I was only ahead of you.
Because it wasn't there. He was just like, who do I talk to? And he's like, well, no one. He goes, well, I can either smack the head or one of the kids. Right, so it was a tough choice. So he went with one of the heads.
Yeah.
Before we wrap things up, because I know you're both extremely busy, I would like to stress how much we appreciate you both joining us today. Is there anything that you would like to ask either Ryan or Matt, or anything that you would you'd like to know from the angle of what these guys do with the charity or anything like that?
I was listening to one of your podcasts earlier, and I can see the volume of content that you've created, and you've obviously gone under the skin of this subject specifically and experienced it yourselves. I suppose, coming back the other direction, at JLR, what advice would you have for us going into conversations with our team members, our, you know, other parts of our leadership and whatnot? What value could we take from this back to them?
Do a podcast.
I think for me personally, and again, before I came into the Lily May, I was in education. I was a sports coach for 21 years. The reason I enjoy what I do is I just feel valued, but I also feel there's a place for me to be able to open up about my feelings, my emotions, and my big advice, in my opinion, bereaved parents don't need like rocket science. Doesn't need to be overthought. It doesn't need to be anything that, because I think the issue with sometimes with the subject of baby loss is that it's probably one of the hardest things to go through in life for someone to face. So then sometimes I feel that people who are in management positions or possibly haven't been through it themselves, they might overthink it. Because they're like, well, I don't know, what do I say? And then they start almost panicking in their head. So then they don't actually end up helping the person because they don't know, they just run away from it. I think, in my opinion, that, like I said, from a lived experience, bereaved parent point of view, is that if you can just be there for them, it sounds simple, right? But just be there for them, give them the room to be able to, if they need to open up, open up. If they need to just have their moments, have their moments. When we lost Callie, I was working in a school, and when I went back, they were brilliant to start with, fantastic. When I went back, I felt like I didn't have the room to just, if I needed to step away for 5 minutes, that's sometimes what all I needed. Just give me 5 minutes to reset, bang, I'm back in the game again. So I think if there's areas or places where people can just go into, walk off if they need to, just have 5 minutes, and it is difficult running a business, I get that. But for me, I think that's a big thing, in my opinion. It's the reset. It allows the pressure to come away, and then, right, I'm ready to go back into it.
I would say...
Best answer Matt's ever given in 4 years.
I was about to say, that's a long-winded way of just saying, give him a break.
No, absolutely. No, yeah,
it's ultimately that.
Yeah,
but I know what you mean. I'm only one.
No, yeah. But yeah, no. Yeah.
My advice is, don't try and answer a question where there's no answer. Mm-hmm. Because people will always say how they're feeling and want somebody to listen. And I think where I struggled, certainly at the time, was I had a head teacher that was really good, but she always tried to answer my questions about my loss, why I was feeling like I was, and so forth. And actually, it's an impossible answer. You can't give an answer to it. It's just about being that sounding board and showing an interest in the fact that, and do you know what, even if you're not interested acting, become the best actor in that couple of minutes or that time frame to actually show that you will give somebody time to be able to listen to them and direct them to, you know, the relevant support and stuff like that. And whether that's a charity like ourselves or whether that's things that you've got within in-house, it's just giving them the time and not trying to answer a question that there is no answer for. Because some people do that because they get nervous. And, you know, that's just human nature, isn't it? It's just the way it is. But I think anything is better than nothing.
Yeah.
So, if you take anything away, anything is better than nothing.
No, thank you. Really powerful. And I think a lot of the reason these conversations haven't traditionally happened, how I operate with fear is fear comes from lack of understanding. And I think the work that you're doing here is you're trying to help people understand a very complex, scary subject to approach. So just, yeah, thank you.
Most welcome. Thank you. Maybe we'll, a bit down the road, maybe we can get you in again and see, you know, see what's new.
We can do that when they deliver my car.
Well, round off with one thing. There's no idea is a bad idea, but you might disagree after this little idea that we've got. But it's, these don't know about it yet, so it's my bad idea. But maybe when, because we haven't talked, just one mention about cars. I thought, with any new, just to promote that conversation as well, I think especially with the ways that you both speak, it's brilliant. And just having that accessibility, so you could have just thought about them here. So it's just a little button and you have installed all the new cars. One of them's called either the Leonard line. You press it, straight through to you. You can just talk about your day. Or the Blaine button. And you can have them either side of the steering wheel. We'll have a chat, it in. You pick up within five rings.
Why not?
Just putting it out there.
Excellent.
There we are. Listen, thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much I think it's been insightful all round, actually. And we'll see you very soon. To Leonard Hornick, who's the Chief Commercial Officer, and Blaine Chapman, the Global Brand Communications Director, both for JLR, Jaguar, Land Rover. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us. Really appreciate it.
This has been the Still Parents Podcast. We got our app, by the way, and if you got a moment to jump on and give us a little cheeky review, I know you're busy, I know you got your own stuff going on, but if you got 30 seconds, that'll be amazing. If not, well, we'll remember. And we'll be back very soon with our next episode. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
The Still Parents Podcast is proudly supported by Global's Make Some Noise. Click details in the description to find out more.